Hi, this is the Mormon Mixed Faith Marriage Podcast with Certified Life Coach Brooke Booth, episode number 131. Today, I've got a good friend and colleague of mine, Suzette Halterman. You can find her online. I believe it's Suzette Ward Halterman. Is that correct,
Yeah,
Suzette?
it's yeah, Suzette
Or
Halterman
Suzette
coaching.com.
Halterman Coaching is the other way. Yeah, probably the one I should use more often. Okay,
Suzette
Suzette,
Ward Halterman, that's just my personal
your
one.
personal one. Okay, so it's Suzette Halterman Coaching, if you want to find her online. She and I meet regularly to do our mixed faith marriage panel discussion, and I wanted to have her on one-on-one on the podcast to pick her brain a little bit more, because whenever we do those panel discussions, I'm always incredibly impressed with your perspective and what you have to say. And I'm really impressed with the kind of relationship you've been able to create in your own relationship, your own marriage. And so, welcome. Glad to have you here.
Glad to be here.
So Suzette is a coach who helps people navigate, I would say, difficult relationships or challenging situations, specifically mixed faith marriage, but not exclusively mixed faith marriages. She prefers her passion, as I've heard her say, is couples work. And she lives in Colorado. She's got four kids. And she is, and I want to hear, we'll talk more about this, but she is active but not believing. I think some people call that PIMO. What does PIMO stand for? I'm not remembering off the top of my head.
Physically and mentally out, which I think
Physically.
would describe me.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that over the course of the podcast and how it implies, not implies, but how it applies to parenting and things like that. All right. So I've heard you say this, that you keep attending church, you're physically and mentally out, to keep in touch with your compassion, to check your judgment. I want to know more about that. I want to know more about that process for you. Would you mind sharing more about that?
Yeah, so first, let me give some context about our situation because everybody's situation is different. And so I think context helps. So, my husband, his job requires him to work 2 weekends a month at least. So, he attends church a maximum of twice a month. And sometimes, we plan vacations and stuff when he's not working. So, sometimes he only goes to church once a month. Sometimes I go more than him. So people who don't know us well think that he's inactive and that I'm like the stalwart member, which is kind of funny. So that's just the nature of our situation. So me attending to support him does not look like me going every week, because he's only there twice a month. But my kids do have friends at church, so there's that aspect, and so sometimes they want to go to be with their friends. So I do attend, but my attendance does not look like it did when I was believing. So it's not like I'm just going and pretending like everything's the same. I have talked to my bishop. My bishop knows exactly where I stand. I said I don't want any callings where I have to teach or anything like that. I currently am in the nursery. So sometimes I only go just to do my calling. Sometimes I don't even go to first hour. My attendance looks very different than it used to. So yes, I attend, and we can get into the reasons why, but I'm not attending all the time, and it does look very different. There, it's not like I'm just pretending. It's very clear that my attendance is different.
I think that's actually really helpful context, because a lot of times, just in like how LDS people think about attendance, it's like all or nothing kind of an approach, like just how we think about a lot of things, And I have to admit, I'm sitting here listening to you say that, and I'm like, oh yeah, I was totally just assuming you were there like every Sunday. It's just like,
Yeah, so that's there is there's a spectrum of attendance, and I think some people go and pretend that nothing has changed for them, and that has its own set of problems. And I'll get into talking about that. What, kind of how to healthily do these different things. But yeah, that's what it looks like for me. So I attend at least sec, you know, because my calling is an almost every week calling, like. But it's easy to find subs for. So I don't know. I attend probably half the time to three quarters of the time. And a lot of times, though, it's just going to
Just
second hour, my calling.
the three. Yeah.
Yeah.
So why? Like if you don't mind sharing, like tell me about the why of why you do keep going even though you don't believe.
Yes. So there is a lot to that. For one, A healthy, I believe a health, the framework of healthy relationships that I use is that there's a solid sense of I and a solid sense of we, and you have to have both. Me attending is part of our we. My husband values the church. He really values the social aspect of church, the friendships. He loves to have families from church over for barbecues. Me, if I were to remove my records, there's a lot of social capital involved in being a member. And this is not a diss on members. This is just humans in general. We create in groups and out groups. Like we do that as naturally as we breathe. And being an ex-Mormon is you are a member of the out group. And that's just normal to create kind of a sense in people of you are an other, you're not safe. And that affects friendships. And, so there's a lot to that. So it's part of our we that I am okay doing. I can maintain my membership because that's important. The social value is important to my husband. And I can do that without it affecting the individual I part. That's just part of who I am. Like I have the skills to be okay at church. Not everybody does. That's kind of, it also comes from privilege. Like I've had, the trainings and the courses on how to manage my own nervous system and all that stuff. So I can be okay. So I go to be, that's my way. That's part of our we. It matters to my husband. I want to support my husband. It also matters to my kids because, like I said, they have friends there. So that's me valuing the we and thinking about the impact to my husband. But the part that I'm not just doing it for that. I go because it's an excellent place for me to practice a lot of skills. I am a recovering codependent, so my self-worth has always largely depended on other people validating me and
Yeah, I
seeing
can
me
relate.
a certain way. And so me going to church is 100%. I am practicing differentiation skills. I'm practicing being okay within myself when other people say things about non-believers, or I'm practicing like having my inner abundance within me, not detract and having that not being taken from by other people. So it to me, it's like differentiation. You can't think your way through differentiation. It's like you can't think your way through muscle building. Like it requires actual resistance. For me, church is an excellent practice
It's your
room.
weightlifting session.
It is totally my weightlifting session. And that's what I'm into. I'm not into weightlifting. I'm into these skills of differentiation, recovering from codependency. Like, this is my hobby. If I wasn't doing it, I would be like going on a run listening to podcasts about it or reading a book about it. Like, it's just my interest and my passion. And so when I go to church, I'm actually engaging in my passion. And it's super fulfilling to me, even though I'm actually like agnostic. I don't even. An atheist, but not for religious reasons, because it is excellent practice for my codependency, for my differentiation, for my just relationship skills of like separating myself from other people, psychological boundaries. Like I'm a very porous person, meaning people say something and I can take it personal really easily. So I do a lot of like imagery practices during sacrament meeting. I do a lot of visualizing. Like there's a lot of skills that I'm practicing that I actually teach my clients, but I use them and I'm feel myself getting stronger in my ability to like separate other people from me and not be impacted. So like a day that I can walk away from church and have it not have drained me and impacted me, and I totally still feel my own abundance within and my self-esteem. And I feel good about what I'm doing. Like, I'm like, this is an excellent day for me. And it's so fulfilling. And I'm like, yay, me, go me, So
Yeah.
that's a super long answer as to why I go.
I'm absolutely fascinated by this because something I teach clients a lot. My undergrad was in anthropology. And it's such an interesting idea. So this is what I teach clients. I'll teach them like, just so you be like Margaret Mead, or whatever anthropologist comes to your mind. And like, because a lot of times you can't separate yourself from church, whether it's happening in family practices or the actual meetings. And like, but can you just like watch it like an anthropologist would watch a different culture? And that's in part what I'm hearing you're doing.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I learn a lot about my own religious trauma when I go because I can like aware of what gets activated and when. And I'm just like, interesting. Like I learn about myself Like I watch my fawning response, my people pleasing response going to hyperdrive when there's like men in authority asking me direct questions that like melt into this like little girl mode. And I'm like, that is so fascinating. So it helps me learn about myself and where I need to work and where, all those things. So it's interesting.
It's really interesting to me too. And what's so interesting is that I don't think I could do what you do effectively. Like I'm thinking like me putting myself in like going on a weekly or bi-weekly or something basis, like I'm not sure I would personally benefit the way you benefit because I have different triggers and different traumas and different things that I'm working through. And that's what's so interesting as I'm listening to this, I'm like, oh yeah, I could see that it would totally work. I could also see that that totally wouldn't work for me.
And this is why this is very important to know yourself. This is not, I don't think there's any moral superiority to going or to resigning or, to any of that because everybody's different. And like I
It's
said,
not
this,
a one size fits all.
it is not. And this comes from a place of this happens to be my passion. If it wasn't, it would be like miserable work. It's like people who love to go to the gym, they go to the gym because they love it. I'm not like a gym rat. I would hate it. But I love this personal growth work. So for me, it's fun in this like weird way. But to other people, it wouldn't be. And like I said, I have training and skills to do it. Otherwise, it might cause more damage to me. And that's
And I'm thinking of my own experience because like I also have some training and skills. I am also a geek times whatever about like codependency and all these things too. And I'm sitting here thinking of my own experience. Like the reason I stopped going to church was in large part because it was actually hurting my marriage more than it was helping the
Well,
marriage.
yeah.
Like me sitting there next to him and like having my little like commentary was eroding away at our connection and our safety and our trust and all sorts of things. And what's so fascinating is I can see that and I'm like, yeah, that was a good decision. And I see yours and I'm like, yeah, and that was a good decision. Like
Yeah.
it, I really think that when people are navigating this mixed faith, this faith transition area, that it's really helpful to hear other people's stories, but it's also even more helpful to be selective and understand what applies to you and what doesn't apply to you. And I think our own particular experiences highlight that pretty good. But how about this? If you were counseling a client, you know, making this decision to attend or not attend, like understanding what we've set up here, that everybody's different, like how would you approach that? Because this is a question a lot of clients bring to me and a lot of people struggle over. You see it online in like the social media spheres all the time, like people going, but it's killing them inside, people going and they're perfectly fine with it. Like you see it all over. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So because I work with couples, interestingly enough, I don't actually deal with people trying to make that decision. Usually, if they're coming to get help from me or someone else, they've already made that decision. And so here's what usually happens. I get the aftermath. So again, like I said, I think healthy relationships are about the I and the we. So oftentimes when there's been too much I, and someone has resigned their records or removed their records without consideration of the we, they've just done it and like there's didn't even tell their spouse, then it really disrupts the marriage and they end up having to go come get help from me or someone else. So I kind of see the aftermath of it having it not balanced between the I and the we. Or on the opposite side, when people kind of just fold into the relationship, there's no I, there's no like, here's what's going to work for me and what's not going to work for me. And they just keep pretending and they're just going to total out of people pleasing their spouse, keeping the peace, not rocking the boat. The aftermath of that is different. The symptoms of that in the marriage are different. So I see the aftermath of it being either too I-centered or too we-centered. How and the symptoms of that, how that impacts the marriage, the dysfunction in the marriage is very different depending on if it's more I-centered or more we-centered. So that's usually what I'm dealing with. So if I were lucky enough to deal with a couple who was in the midst of making that decision, I would talk about the I and the we. There's a lot of work to be done. So I don't think that this process of do I stay, do I go, do I resign, do I remove my records, it should really be slowed down to really look at all these pieces. Like, what do I need? What do I value? What's important to me? Is there a way that I can carve out, if I were to attend, is it reasonable for me to carve out kind of a way to do it that works for me? So Like personally, for me, I can do it because I've got a bishop that's awesome. Like he's a friend of ours. He's an amazing guy. So I can carve out a space for me and say, look, I don't believe, I don't want to hold a temple recommend, I don't do all these things. Here's what I can and can't do. And he has worked with me. He even just said, like, what callings do you want? Do you want a calling? Do you not? Like, I can carve out a space for me to do it my way. But not everybody can. You might have a bishop that's very black and white. You might have people that are pushing boundaries and you just can't carve out a space for you. So you have to really look at how can I, could I carve out a space to do it my own way in a way that works for me? Would my spouse be okay with that? Are they on my team, my side of like supporting me and doing it maybe in a non-traditional way? So you got to look at the I. But then you also have to look at the we, the things we've been talking about. What matters to your spouse? Like for my spouse, the social aspect matters more than the belief aspect. Or, what would a we look like? Do they just need some more time to like process this? Could you give it a year of before you actually like remove your records to show consideration for the we, or 6 months, or what do they need from you to be more okay with it? Do they need assurance that if you remove your records, you're not also going to just the same day go, experiment with mushrooms and are they panicking? Do they need some agreements? Do they need some assurances? So you got to work on the we. How can you make it work for the other person? Because that is part of marriage. Your lives impact each other, they're intertwined. That's a fact. You have to be considerate of that and be curious. And is there a way I can do this that will be better for you, and that still holds on to who I am and what matters to me. And that's a balance.
It is, I'm thinking, because I agree with everything you're saying, and I've seen it. What I'm thinking is, I see a lot of people as they're trying to find the balance between the I and the we. And this is a lot of work around codependency, and this is a lot of work around like acknowledging that there is like an impact of your behavior on the other person, but like not taking that so far that you do become codependent. Like I'm seeing all of this interwoven in what you're saying. What I see is a lot of people sort of swing a little bit on this pendulum between the I and the we, and they might go way over into the I, or they might go way over into the we. And you know what? I think that's kind of normal. Like,
It
I think
is.
that's part of how we figure out the balance of the I and the we. And I like to create some space for, like, yeah, that's okay. Like, you don't have
Absolutely.
to stay over here. You're learning, you're gathering data, you're learning what's working and what's not working, and you can make adjustments over here. And sometimes you're gonna over swing on that. That's okay. I think sometimes we go into these things like because we know tools, because we're hearing people like Suzette talk about the I and the we, that we can somehow execute this with like a perfectly flawless double loop land on our
Yeah.
feet perfectly. And yeah, that's not
I
gonna.
totally agree. I totally agree. In fact, and I don't even know that balance is the right word because what we're aiming for is just flexibility to go back and forth
I think that's
really
a different
easily.
way of saying it.
Yeah. Deconstruction is inherently an I-centered process. Like it has to be. It's going to be about my pain, my fears, my everything, my protective mechanisms because I've been hurt. I feel betrayed. Like it's a very I-centered process, but you got to swing back into the we. Like you got to kind of remember, like, and I'm still married to you. And I have to think about what it's like for you to be married to me right now when I'm like so focused on myself. So it's this con yeah, it is. It's a constant swing back and forth. And there are times when you're going to be more I-centered, but you don't want to lose the we. And I think if we're talking about like and we'll get into this later, but resigning, records and things like that. It can be done in a healthy way of this kind of, swinging between the I and the we, but it can also be done from a very I-centered place with like, there's no we in this. The we is like miles away. So,
And I totally agree with you. When I see something all in the eye making these decisions or all in the we, I think that's where the most harm happens.
totally.
And again, though I want to be really cautious if you're listening, is like we're not aiming for perfection here, right? Like it's never going to be a perfect balance, but it's at least good to be aware of like.
Yeah, even my own journey, I think it was more we-centered than I-centered because I tend to be, I am a codependent in recovery. It was more people-pleasing, afraid to rock the boat. Like I was definitely more we-centered. I had to learn to swing back into the I and carve out and be okay with who I was. So yeah, No, it's a process for sure.
So I think if you're listening to this, like it might be a really interesting question to like, am I tend to be more in the I camp or the we camp? And maybe I can sort of gravitate in the other direction as I work through this. I like that. I really do. Okay, let's talk about resigning then. It can be a really touchy topic. I've talked to clients about this quite a bit. Let me just ask you personally, have you thought of the option? I know you've already given us some context here but I'm curious what your thoughts are. Like, have you considered it? Why or why not? I'll tell my own story about my spouses because it's interesting, but like, what's your experience considering resigning?
Yeah, I definitely do think about it, have thought about it. I've talked about it with my husband. I think clear is kind, and boundaries can be a form of clarity both within yourself and for the people around you. Like, to be very clear, like, this is not changing. I am not coming back. So I think clear is kind. And I wrestle with that sometimes. And I'm like, would it be better? Would it be more kind to resign so that the people around me aren't confused? Because I know it could be very confusing for people in my ward, because I'm like, I'm there, but I'm not really. And people that know I don't even believe in it are like, why are you so here? It can be confusing. But those aren't the relationships that I care about, which is why I haven't done it. I care about my relationship with my husband. And in that relationship, I don't need that boundary. He knows where I stand. He knows this is not going to change. So and I don't need it within myself. It's not a boundary, a psychological boundary I need for myself. Again, because I've just have developed a lot of these other skills. So I have a very clear boundary within me. I don't need that. I don't need that for me. I can be okay whether my membership records are there or not. But just who I am, and my husband can be okay. So for me, it's not a needed boundary for clarity at this point. And my family, they don't, my family and my extended family, they all pretty much leave us alone. They don't push, they don't. So it's not a boundary that's needed in those relationships either. But for some people, it is. For some people, the only part of it that sometimes calls to me about resigning is as a vote of like, I don't agree with this. But I also know in reality, it's not a vote. Like, people leave all the time, it doesn't change anything. And so my own way right now of activism is just showing up, being my own person, and being like, I'm going to do things my way, no matter what you say or do. Take that. You know, that's kind of my own little sassy form of activism that works for me. So anyway, that's why I do think about it sometimes. There might be a point in the future that I do need want that clarity, clear as kind boundary. It's just not needed in my relationship and in my personal life at this point.
And I can really relate to that. I think it can change over time, and a decision you make one day can change in the next year or just over time. I'm thinking when I first had my faith transition, my husband was very concerned that I was going to consider resigning. And ironically enough, thought never even occurred to me at the time. But I remember him coming to me specifically asking, please do not resign. Please, this is really important to me. And I hadn't even really considered it. So I'm like, no problem. Like, if this is important to you, not important to me. And that was a really easy decision to make at that time. But I have noticed, like, that's been years now. And now I'm like, maybe I do want to just be in integrity with myself. And it's something I'm revisiting and reconsidering. I'm
Which is
primarily
so interesting. I assumed that you had already like resigned. It's so funny when someone calls themselves like an ex-Mormon or a post-Mormon, you just make assumptions. It's so interesting.
I know, like I was just seeing you at the pew every Sunday, like in sacrament meeting, and you're seeing me with like my letter of resignation taped to my door. Right? Like I know. And a lot of people are surprised when they hear that about me, but I haven't. And primarily because of my husband's ask a few years ago. But my oldest is, I think she's 19 now. This is embarrassing. I can't remember. I'm pretty sure she's 19 now. When she turned 18, that was like the first thing she did was resign. And it was interesting to me. She had one of my aunt, like one of her aunts help her. Like I didn't even know she had done it until months later. Not that I have a problem with it, but it was really interesting that that was something that she felt really strongly about. And it just got me thinking, like, is that something I feel strongly about? Because I had just put it like out of sight, out of mind for so long. That's my own experience. And I actually have decided that this year that that's something I want to revisit and look at more closely. And it's there's a lot of things I'm revisiting, so that's sort of
Yeah.
maybe the second half of the year. But I'm,
Which is normal. Let's just say that is such a normal part of all of this is like
isn't
it's always shifting. It's always shifting.
it? And that's the part, like I like how you talk about flexibility. And I think this is part of that. Like a decision I made 4 years ago in a very different mindset, in a very different part of my relationship dynamic, like it can be fundamentally different now. And I think it's worth revisiting. I mean, I think I'm an attorney and it really just drives so much of how I see the world. And I think like if I had like signed a contract, I had a client and I signed a contract 4 years ago and it was like a 4 year contract and we're looking at it again, I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, it's fine. Let's just use the same one. I would be like, okay, what's different? What do we need to change?
Right.
What didn't work? Like I would want to iterate. I would want to like innovate. I would want to make it better. And I think in relationships, we sometimes don't bring like innovation and iteration because we label it as being inconsistent. We give it funny labels or as being flip-floppy or as like changing the rules. Anyway, I'm all for
I
questioning
love that. We should label it. Like, this is our mixed faith marriage version 1.0. Maybe it was a little more we centered. 2.0 was like, oh, let's revisit. 3.0, maybe you resign. Yeah, lots of different.
And even just looking at it in the we versus I approach, like it's going to be like as you learn how to do that better and as you find sort of that flow and balance between the two, things are going to need to change accordingly. So let's talk about how we see this with like people we work with, options and how people approach it, because it can be very uncomfortable. And I've seen this, it can be very uncomfortable. Tell you about a specific situation I'm thinking of. The person who'd had the faith transition, this was very important for her. Like she felt like it was part of her healing. It was part of her dealing with a lot of things that she was working through. And her husband was not at all comfortable with it. And I could see that we dynamic was just blaring loud in her ears. Like she could hardly hear the I aspect of it because the we was so strong for her. And it was really hard for her to take the steps that she needed to for her own, like, journey and development and like care because of the we aspects. Like I really saw that balance playing out there strongly. That's a hard dynamic to work with.
It is.
Like, how have you seen this play out?
So I think in situations like that, you just got to spend some time like asking, for the partner that's really having a hard time with that, what would you need from me to make this easier? That this is part of the we. Like, what would be helpful to you? Is it time? Is it agreements? Is it assurances? Is it like, and so that we could find something that has a little bit of both. So for the spouse that's really struggling, yeah, just some communication without, don't try to problem solve first. Just try to really understand. Understanding always precedes problem solving.
You have
What?
to repeat that. I'm going to pause. Like,
Okay.
please.
Understanding always, always, always precedes problem solving.
Thank you.
Everybody gets to problem solving, but if you don't know what you're trying to solve, you can't
Thank you.
really solve.
Just had to pause that because that is something I have to come back to all the time. Like, we are not in the problem-solving phase at all yet. Okay.
Right.
You were saying.
So yeah, just trying to find out what would be helpful to them and what's it about? Why? Again, like for my husband, it was the reason he didn't want me to resign was because of the social aspects, the stigma, how that would affect our kids' friends. Like our kids aren't gonna, their parents aren't gonna want our kids to come to their house, or they're not gonna let their kid come to our house for sleepovers because they're gonna be afraid of you. That's like, a reality of in-group, out-group distinction. So finding out the why, what's the fear, what would you need, what would be helpful? And then is there a way to kind of have a healthy combination of the we and the I, which might look like let's wait a year. Like, is it not if or 6 months or 1 month? Like, urgency can often be a sign of fight, flight, or freeze.
Yes, it can. Yes, it
So if there's an urgency, like I have to resign today, I have to resign this month, that probably means there's other things going on. So slow down. Let's get out of fight, flight, or freeze mode. Let's talk about all of this stuff and see if there's a way we can kind of find something workable. I think there's workable ways to do it. Again, just agreements about like what it's going to look like or how you would be or how you can support your spouse. How can you find your we even if you do remove your records? Can you still be supportive of them in their attendance? Can you still, there's a lot to talk about. Like, how's that going to affect family rituals, like prayer before meals? There's like so much that needs to be talked about and addressed before you even need to, make these concrete decisions.
I agree, because it's part of the like developing the awareness and the understanding before going into the problem solving. So I'll offer a few things that I sometimes see in that realm of like the understanding and the awareness. And that's like, is there a pattern of avoiding negative emotions? Like if your spouse is uncomfortable, do you just immediately back off? That one's always really interesting to see, like, and why? What's going on there? Like, are you allowed to express ideas and viewpoints and put ideas out there? Do they carry equal weight with your partner? Really interested in that. Like, if this is something that's important to you and it just gets vetoed, 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 like, what's going on there? And I think a lot of this is like understanding what's happening in the relationship, because a lot of times this conversation is more symptomatic of other issues happening. And it can, like I like how your example here of like the social implications were what was really important to your husband. That can take a minute to even understand. That can take a fair amount of conversations. I know in my own relationships, when we start to dig into things, a lot of times it's more of this like not being able to tolerate negative emotion is a lot of the pattern I see in my own relationship. If I come presenting a negative emotion, my husband's like, la, 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 la. Like, you're fine, you're fine, you're fine. Tell me you're happy. Tell me everything's okay. And it can really be hard to like have really meaningful, important conversations and understand each other when there's not even space for somebody to show up, with an issue. And so I think if you are talking about resigning, I would actually say it's a great, rich opportunity to do this awareness and understanding, because there's going to be
And
there.
get a coach or a therapist to facilitate those discussions, because they can get heated, there's a lot, or to guide like what you need to talk about, because sometimes it's just overwhelming or you don't know. So sometimes just take a couple months to just have that conversation with the third party present to guide it.
It can make all the difference in the world. It's so fascinating what you'll say with a third party there than what you won't say. And it's fascinating what like comes to the surface when you feel like it's safe. Because that's what a lot of times what I think a third party can do is that you're like, well, because they're here, my spouse can't like go
It
off
can
the rails.
change things a little bit because it does create safety.
It's interesting what that dynamic can do.
And one more thing about that, just a lot of times people hold on, like, I don't want you to resign because they don't know what a we could look like without that. So sometimes a lot of it is just trying to imagine what building your life together is going to look like, what a we would look like if you're no longer a member. And that can take time too. A lot of people just don't even have any idea what that could look like. What can a we look like? So of course they're going to hold on and be afraid, not want you to resign. If they have no, we're often stuck because we don't have a vision of the next step. So that is a huge part of it. Like having a vision for the next step will often loosen kind of the grasp on them.
I think this is actually a really important comment you're making, because it's like basically the fear of the unknown. And this is work I've done myself, is when you're able to contemplate like how it could look, what it might look like, and then have conversations around that. I think it can bring like that fight, flight, freeze down. It can bring some level of like comfort and understanding up. And then when you're able to like bring that down and bring this up, now all of a sudden we're able to access ideas and solution so much easier. And this is also ties into like the urgency and taking time, that like, there is not often a rush here in a resignation decision. I get that one client I'm thinking of, like I remember they would meet like every 3 months to like re just like touch base. Where are we on this? Like just in knowing that it was okay to take that. Okay, let's pivot over into kids. I want to talk to you a little bit about kids. Kids and church attendance specifically. This is something I talk to a lot. There's a
Yes.
lot of strong feelings, a lot of tenderness, and a lot of really hurt feelings in this regard. Let's talk about, like, what if the kids don't want to go? This, like, what are your suggestions? They don't want to go. I have definitely heard this example of, well, duh, they don't want to go, but like, of course they don't want to go. Like, that's irrelevant. Or like, well, they don't want to go to school and we make them go to school. Like, I hear things like
I
this
hear
too.
that one all the time. Yes.
Yeah, pretty regularly. What are your thoughts on that?
I sighed when when we're moving to talking about kids, because this is a huge thing. And even when couples come to me and it's like, and the parenting aspect of it, I'm always like, because there's so much work that couples haven't done. As far as this all depends. What is your parenting like philosophy? How old are your kids? What are your values as parents? This is all like the precursor to making these decisions. So the example of like, well, kids don't want to go to school, but they have to go to school. Yeah, but you've done a lot of work as a couple on why are you doing public school versus homeschooling or private school or charter school? And I've got four kids, so I know, sometimes there's actual reasons. Like I had one that ended up being clinically depressed and he had to get on medications. That's why he didn't want to go to school. And one who had to skip a grade because he was bored out of his mind. So, and that's why he didn't want to go to school. So there was a lot of digging on our part as parents. Like, why don't you want to go to school? So I hate the school example just because
How do I?
parents don't realize how nuanced they are in their how they tackle that when kids are like, I don't want to go to school. Well, is this normal? Is this not? Is your teacher actually horrible? Is there bullying? Like parents dig in.
Even add, like, it's a law to send your kids to school. Like, you're legally required, and it's not to send your kids to church. Like, there's distinctions here. The ones you're making, I think, are super important. And I'm always uncomfortable when that's the analogy that's brought up. Because I don't think it's an accurate comparison. I don't think we're comparing apples to apples.
Yeah, so just drop that comparison. Let's get rid of that comparison. And
Suzette and I are drop kicking that one out the door for all of you.
so what I like to do with parents is I just like, let's back up. Like, have a philosophy that's guiding your parenting that you plug all this stuff into instead of taking each thing and how are we going to do this and how are we going to do this. I've noticed that as parents, there's so many things that come up, not just with church stuff, but like, do I let them quit music lessons? Do I let them do this? Do I let them or not? And you got to have some philosophies that are guiding your parenting because there's so much complexity that comes with all the kids stuff. So I back up with them. What are your parenting philosophies? Do you have one? What are your parenting values? And how can we plug this in? Like, if your kids are 16 and they don't want to go, what's your parenting philosophy around teenagers? So, for example, I was talking to a friend of mine, not about church stuff, but she has multiple teenagers, and their parenting philosophy is by the time they're seniors, we take away all the rules. Our philosophy is we are preparing to totally let go of the reins. When they're seniors, there are no rules. That way they have some cushion, and if they make a lot of mistakes, they're in the safety of our home. That's their parenting philosophy. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I could do that one. But if that's their philosophy and their kids are like, we don't want to go to church, and they're 16, that guides them. Well, in a couple years, we don't have any say in what you do or don't do. So let's start talking about why you do or don't want to go to church. What's your reasoning? What are your goals in life? What do you want to, what's your spirit version of spirituality? So that would guide their decision. So this is why it's so complex with parenting. It's like, well, it depends on their age and your philosophy for teenagers versus your philosophy for kids. And have you talked about your philosophy? And then how can you plug church attendance into that? So it's hard. It's a lot. And that's why I'm like with couples, I'm like, oh, do you have a year to pay me to help you develop this precursor to even talking about what do we do when our kids don't want to go to church? Because there's a lot of work to be done up leading up to that.
There's so much work to be done. I just want to comment on what you're saying. So I see this. I have a very similar approach where I'm like, okay, like, how do you make parenting decisions? Like, how are parenting decisions made? Like, what are the values underlying your parenting decision? And how do they inform this decision? Like, I totally agree with you on that. The thing that I think a lot of people run up against is a lot of times shockingly enough, we're not actually super familiar with our values.
Exactly.
Like we may, like people tell us what our values should be. We can put a list together of values, but a lot of times we're not like doing that sort of internal, like, this is actually my parenting value and I feel it in my bones. And then I make my decisions in alignment with my values. A lot of times that kind of critical thinking, cognitive analysis is lacking.
Well, and there's so many different parenting approaches. Like, that's
Oh
a
my
whole
goodness.
different topic. There's books, like, even for me and my husband, like figuring out and getting on the same page of what's our parenting philosophy. Like,
Even
that's
as individuals, it's hard. As an individual, it's hard to identify your parenting philosophy.
and then
But
combine it.
yeah, that's like job one is like, what are my values and what do I want to apply to parenting? And how is that going to inform these decisions? And then bringing in your spouse and doing a co-parenting analysis. Then I think I see this is what I see in my own relationship is then sometimes there's struggle with like, well, my opinion's more important than your opinion. Or like, well, I'm not budging on that because this is just the right way and it doesn't matter. Like that can add another layer of complexity.
There's a reason that parenting issues are huge. Marriage fights and marriage, you know, division in marriage is parenting fights. There's a reason because this is a lot, you know, yeah, all the stuff you're talking about. We're combining two different styles, two different methods. So all of this has to be addressed before you can even tackle what are we going to do if our kid doesn't want to go to church? Yeah, well, that depends.
Let me just summarize because I think this is really important. Like, so if you've got kids, and again, whether they're three or whether they're 13, like, there's questions you need to address before. Like, what are your values that you want to apply to parenting? What are your spouse's values that they want to apply to parenting? Like, how can you come together and come up with some sort of combined approach? And then how is that approach working? Like, are there issues you need to talk about within the own partnership of co-parenting that need to be addressed? And you know what, Suzette, you make a really interesting point. You're like, this is going to take a year for us to even get there. And you know what? Sometimes that's absolutely true. Sometimes we want a solution to whether the kids should go to church on Sunday. And we want that. And we kind of are like hungry for that and thirsty for that. And we forget that it's going to actually take a year of conversations before we can even get to some sort of clean consensus on that. And you know what? That's sometimes just how it is.
And I can tell you, and I know all that's really abstract. So I can give some concrete of like, here's what we do. The parenting for our younger kids, our parenting philosophy is development, character development. That's what me and my husband have come to. So church is about, we focus on the character development aspect, not the belief aspect. So you go because then you're in community with all different kinds of people. You're exposed to different opportunities, service. You know, those are the elements that we emphasize, not the belief aspect. And then our parenting philosophy for our teenagers is trying to help them develop choice so that they can make healthy, you know, so we're trying to increase the choices that they can make in their freedom and kind of us pulling back. So personally with our kids, like we either all go as a family and we go, like one of our parenting values is we support each other. So we go to church to support dad. Because this is important to him, or we go to church, you know, whatever, but we support friendships. You've got friendships at church. So, you know, we are emphasizing those kinds of things and we don't make it about beliefs. So there's lots of different ways to do it. I also don't like it when parents just like, you know, make it like a, it's up to you every week and there's no structure. I feel like kids then are like trying to people please parents there. So if you are going to do some attendance, I prefer to see it for the kids' benefit as like a, you know, like we go with dad once a month and once a month we stay home so that, and it just helps, clarity is helpful for everybody so that there's not that like frustration in the morning when they don't want to go. And it's like, well, but today's the day we go. So, you know, or like whatever your plan is, I think plans are helpful for everyone.
This is a good point because I do hear the idea of like, well, you know, of course they don't want to wake up early. Of course, they're not going to want to do that. And let making them decide week to week, I do see the like somebody's winning, somebody's losing approach. Like because kids do people please. Kids do read the room and they know that like that's gonna upset mom or that's gonna upset dad. And they play that because that's part of how they create
sensitive kids. My kids are super sensitive. Oh my gosh, that would be so hard on them to know like an upsetting mom if I go.
Yes. Yeah. I think this is part of like the pause, create understanding and create awareness before you think about solving the problem. Like really gathering the information and looking at the full situation very carefully and clearly before you jump in and say, like, this is how we're going to do it. I think that really highlights that
Yeah,
need.
have your why in place before you create your plan, but have a plan that will change depending on their ages and your parenting philosophy for that
Yeah,
age group.
it does. And I'll tell you how we do it is, and it's changed as the kids have changed and as different kids come along and need
Oh,
different
because
things.
y'all are so different. You can't. Yeah.
Yeah. So my kids, I have three teenagers, and then my youngest is nine. And it's been different for all four, believe it or not. But the older kids, teenagers, we're definitely we like the idea of like they're in the home safe, but they need to be able to make their own decisions. And then if they fall flat on their face, we're here to help them clean up the mess, figure out what went wrong, learn how to make decisions better. Like that's more of our philosophy, very similar to how you've described it. And so in large part, we let the kids decide if they're gonna go to church. But you make a good point because they don't decide week to week to week to week. It's more they decide if they are going to be churchgoers or not churchgoers. And I hadn't really put my finger on that until you were able to highlight that. And I'm like, oh yeah, that is how the decision was made. But that can be really challenging because again, it comes back into now it feels like one spouse is winning and one spouse is losing. And we'll talk about that. But I have found in my own relationship, because we were so clear on our values first, that when we offer that decision to our kids and we let them exercise their own like decision making because that was value based, we were able to better handle like the actual outcome of it with a lot more grace and understanding. Like it didn't feel like such a win-lose for us, or I should say for my husband, because my three older ones don't go. But my youngest one does and really enjoys it. And I have to work through my own stuff with him going and really enjoying it. It's interesting because, but I have found like personally, because we're making these based on values, it's a lot more gentle of a, like I'm managing myself. It's easier. I have more gentle experiencing managing myself throughout that. Let's talk about this idea of like the winner and loser with the parents. Like I have seen this when a kid goes, the parent might feel rejected. They might feel like, oh, like they're my child is going to judge me. They're going to deem me unworthy or wrong. They're going to not think as well of me. The people pleasing can go both ways in a parent-child relationship. Tell me what your thoughts are about this.
So this is about boundary work. This is about psychological boundaries and holding your abundance within. So knowing that your relationship with your child is strong and that your love and that is not going to be affected by what people say, that you're okay. People can think that, people can tell your kid that, and you have that sense of I'm okay and my child's going to be okay and our relationship is going to be fine. So it codependency is when your abundance comes from other people doing or saying things that make you feel that abundance. So in this situation, people are going to say things, and really learning to build up that muscle of being okay and knowing your relationship with is okay and having confidence in your connection with your own child, that it doesn't matter what people tell him or her. Like, my kid's gonna feel my love, so he's gonna be able to just let that one slide right past. You model that for your kids through who you are. Like, the more you can let stuff slide because you know within yourself, like, we're good, I'm good, none of that matters, the more your child will be able to do that too. And that's a practice.
It is a practice. You know what I see is so interesting is when somebody has a faith transition, let's just look at like the faith transition aspect. A lot of times their parenting goes through a transition too.
Only.
A lot of times they look at parenting in a different way than they have before, and it can like impact how they do this mixed faith marriage parenting. I see where before they may have been more authoritative or more like this is just how it's done or this is just the rules to they sometimes take more of an approach of well, what do you think or is this working for you? And I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it is a shift I see. And a lot of times I'll see a parent who's having these shifts in their beliefs and their philosophy and their ideology, and they want to talk to their kid about this because there's a fundamental belief that that's part of parenting, sharing these important things and making sure your kids have the information they need to make good decisions and like proselyting a little bit to your kid and making sure that they got the information and the right answers and all this. And I see this sort of tension build where they want to be less judgmental and they want to be more like understanding, but they still are like, but my job as a parent is to like tell them what the truth is and what the right decision is. It can be a really challenging kind of push-pull situation where, and then add on top of it, they don't want to come in and just be like, mom's an idiot and kid does all these stupid things at church or dad's a dangerous person now that he's, I don't know, drinking coffee in the morning or something like that can really complicate parenting. The idea of like now my parenting philosophy shifted and now it's different than my spouse's, or what was a strict rule now maybe isn't a strict rule, or what was my approach now isn't my approach. What do you think about that? How do you approach
Well,
that? How does
there's
your
a ton of
experience?
reorienting that has to be done because this is a change. This is a change to the, so it's reorienting. Plus, I think a mixed faith marriage and faith deconstruction, all that, it really reveals the underlying work you haven't done. Differentiation,
Absolutely.
codependency, where you haven't figured out how we make decisions. And so a lot of it is like, oh, I realized we didn't, it's like jumping, you're in the advanced level class without having taken like the fund of the prerequisites. You got to go back to the prerequisites. A mixed faith marriage exposes all the prerequisites you didn't do. So
It
you got
does.
to do them or redo them because, things have shifted so much that you're a completely different person and you got to go back and, do like a refresher course on the prerequisites. So there's just, yeah, there's that. And then as far as the kids and like kind of need feeling like you need to give them information and give them the truth, that is so common. We often outsource our work, our differentiation work by trying to like control our kids. And really it's you're modeling. You don't need to tell them anything. Model not being codependent, model being abundant within yourself, knowing who you are, making decisions, just being like, hey, that's for me. This is what I do with my kids. I'm like, church was not for me today. I did not really like that. And but I'm okay, right? Just modeling that they can take and leave what they want. So they're that's yeah, it's tricky. I could say a lot about that, but I know let's make mixed faith parenting a whole nother topic.
I'm happy to do that. I'll offer my two cents and then we'll wrap up. I actually tell people this a lot is they're like always concerned that their kids are basically going to grow up the way they grew up, sort of like kind of in a box and not really having the choice that they would have liked to have had, or things like this. And I offer them, based on this like modeling philosophy that I do buy into, I offer like they're having a fundamentally different experience already because they have one spouse who, a mother or father who does believe in and a mother or father who doesn't believe. Like already, we're talking about a fundamentally different situation than you had. And
And
that's
permission
and
to take it and
precisely. Yeah, like so well said. Like they're already on a different like platform. They already have different like rules of engagement. They already have different like what's okay and what's not okay. And I think so often we just need to like take a deep breath and like live. I like how you're saying this, live abundantly, but like live abundantly in our genuine truth, live abundantly in what we're where we are right now, live abundantly in how we're making decisions. And that gives our children so much permission to do that for themselves.
yeah, that is the work, is be okay within your own skin. Like that is your job as a parent in a mixed faith situation. The I model the I and the we. The I is the being okay in your own skin, and the we is, healthy give and take and compromise. And your kids will pick up on that way more than they will if you're sitting there telling them all the
Right.
facts.
And I think that's more effective parenting anyway than, sitting down and reading podcasts or blog posts or whatever, than like living, hey, I used to believe this and now I don't, and that's okay. And you can change your mind too. And they don't, mom doesn't change her mind, but that's okay too.
Oh, beautiful. I wish more parents would do that.
I do too. I do too. Okay. That's all we've got for today. Any like wrap up comments that sort of were swirling around your head that you want to add?
No, I know that was a lot. We gave everybody a lot, but you and I could talk for hours. I love this stuff. So, hope, no, I think we covered a lot of important information today.
I'll just wrap up with, like the message that I heard that I'm really intrigued with is, there's not a right or wrong way of doing this. Right? There's not like if you do it, this is gonna mess up, or if you don't do this, this is gonna be bad. But like, I think so much of this process, whether that's with your spouse or with your children, is to like, give yourself a lot of space and gentleness and expansiveness to sometimes be in the way and sometimes be in the eye and sometimes proselyte to your children and sometimes back up and just model, like to just like give yourself space to be all over the place, and then to just gently put your like lead yourself as you gather the information, as you get the feedback, as you're like, oh, I was just in the way, instead of like, and just to give yourself like that gentle redirection. I know personally, when I find myself in a space I don't want, I'll be like, what were you thinking, Brooke? How could you have been so stupid? You're gonna hurt your kids. Like, this is gonna mess them up, or now your husband's always gonna be whatever. And to just like take a deep breath. And it's like, you can figure this out in just one day, one conversation, one redirection at a time. And it really can be enough.
It's all experiment, readjust, pivot. That is relationship work. Relationship work is we pivot, we adjust, we back to the I, back to the we. So you are doing relationship work as you're messing up, pivoting, forgiving yourself, forgiving others. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Suzette. I appreciate you coming,
Yeah.
and we'll be in
Fun.
touch.